You've heard us talk about it, and now it's finally here. Check out our new book, Death by Umbrella, The 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons, featuring a foreword by none other than Uncle Lloyd Kaufman of Troma Entertainment. The book's available at Amazon.com, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada, as well as Bear Manor Media and Barnes & Noble.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right? All right!
They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
The sinful dwarf, a depraved psychotic misfit, crazed by the charms of young girls and luring them from the city streets into a hellish snake pit.
My son, show you the room.
That blonde girl.
The sinful dwarf, a tantalizing bride trapped in a web of terror.
Last night I heard noises.
Were you snoring?
No. And today people have been walking in and out of that door at the end of the corridor.
Have you seen my wife?
She left. You wanted to see what was in here. Well, now's your chance.
But a new girl you might be interested in.
Watch out for it. The sinful dwarf. Admission restricted.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 106. The sinful dwarf. There's something rotten in the state of Denmark, and it's this gnarly exploitation film.
Indeed.
One of the most disgusting and unsettling and unsavory films we've ever seen. And this is your second time seeing it.
Oh, yeah. No,
although,
I mean,
my first exposure to this was the XXX version. And previously, you watched the more tame version, such as it is. It's still grossly inappropriate. And then this really upped the ante for impropriety.
Oh, yeah. This is a film I rented, I'd say, about 7 or 8 years ago. And I saw the, I was, you know, looking at the shelves of the, you know, suspect video, and I saw this picture of this, this illustration of this lascivious, leering face, and this is the dwarf. And I saw the title of Sinful Dwarf, and right away...
You were sold.
I didn't need to pick up the box, turn it over. I rented this thing.
Yeah.
And it was pretty fucking disturbing and disgusting. Now, this film was recently re-released on Blu-ray by Severin Films, and right away, I gotta buy it. I mean, this is one of those movies I just have to have. Unbeknownst to me is that the version that was put out all those years ago was incomplete because this film was originally shot as a XXX hardcore movie to make it even more disgusting and disturbing. And on the Blu-ray, you have a choice between watching it in its tamer form, or you can watch the full Danish cut, actually called The Dwarf, not The Sinful Dwarf, with the hardcore inserts reinserted. And, yes. You know, I asked you, Chris, which cut do you want to watch? And you...
Oh, I said triple X all the way. So that goes to show you where our headspace is at collectively here.
Do you regret that decision?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. And I really regret the extra courtesy of our buddies at Vinegar Syndrome, the sex film starring the protagonist dwarf, mm-hmm. Torben.
His name is Torben, yeah.
Who plays Olaf in the film. He has his own separate, I guess, sex film career on the side. Mm-hmm. You got to do what you got to do. You got to make a living somehow.
Yeah, one of the special features on the
Blu-ray. At least he's not being tossed.
Well, this is 1973. We don't know what he's up to today. He may very well be tossed.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. So this film falls squarely into the category of exploitation. Now, that is a very broad term. Exploitation. Mm-hmm. You know, the word to exploit, it basically means to use to its full capacity. You know what I mean? If you exploit something, you know, I mean, that's a
wonderful thing. Yeah, like fossil fuels or something.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, let's exploit our resources.
Yeah.
But the word has taken on a negative connotation. I mean, when someone says, you know, I'm being exploited, it doesn't mean they're using me to my full capacity. I'm very happy that all my skill set is being utilized. Yes. No, it's negative. And exploitation as a cinematic genre, well, of course, it's negative to some, it's positive to us. But I mean, yes, what they're doing is they're taking something that is somewhat transgressive, somewhat on the fringes of what's considered mainstream or socially acceptable, and they're using it to its fullest capacity. They're exploiting it. They're taking whatever element it may be, in this case it's a little person, a dwarf, and they're exploiting the inherent otherness of this dwarf for maximum creepiness, maximum pervertedness, maximum sordidness. And that's what we're left with. We have this exploitation film from the great state of Denmark called The Sinful Dwarf. Now, this film stars the one-named Torben. He's not one-legged, he's bow-legged. Yes, and he walks around the cane. And, I mean, just like, you know, other one-named stars such as, you know, Madonna, Cher, Prince. He's Torben. What more do you need? And the great Torben, you know, let's just say he's no Peter Dinklage.
Yeah. No.
He's not much of a thespian.
That goes to show how far we've come, where you have a little person in a proper role, like Game of Thrones or Station Agent, which is one of my favorites. Really neat movie, really really sweet movie. And this kind of thing, where it's just a guy who's... The exploitive element comes in that he's just a manservant who does the bidding of his mother and just...
Well, okay, but before we even get into that, I mean, you mentioned Peter Dinklage, and you say how far we've come. Well, I'm a watcher of Game of Thrones. I've not read the books, but the books apparently are a little bit different than the movie, but the character that he plays...
Lannister.
He's in the world of Game of Thrones, he is considered to be...
A Machiavellian kind of figure.
Well, not just that, no, but he's considered to be hideous, monstrous. Mm. His father rejects him. He's Tyrion Lannister. His father, Tywin Lannister, rejects him because of his dwarfish appearance, because of his dwarfishness. So how far we've come. I mean, I don't think Game of Thrones is the greatest exemplar. Peter Dinklage is an amazing
actor. Well, insofar as he kind of steals the show. Forget the fact that, his origins, but I guess it is kind of true to form, as it's got to be. If you have that to compare... compare and contrast with Little People, Big World.
On TLC. And that's an interesting thing, because, I mean, TLC, and, we're getting on a tangent here, and that's okay, because we'll get back to the movie in a second, but TLC, when that network started, what does TLC stand for?
It was the Learning Channel.
It was the Learning Channel, and when that network started up, it was a proper network. It was like, it was PBS. They had shows with merit, you know? There were shows about history, art, opera, science.
Yeah, and interesting you should mention history, because the same thing befell the History Channel that did TLC. It went from exploring I don't know, the Battle of Hastings in 1066, and Norman conquests, and Romans, and ancient Egypt. And then it became a bunch of guys sitting around in a pub pontificating about Jack the Ripper. And it lacked all legitimacy whatsoever. No academics, nothing.
And now it has porn stars.
Yes.
Whereas the one show in the early days of TLC that some might have said was exploitive, but really, I mean, it still was sort of elucidating at the same time, was Operation. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
I do.
Where they would show an operation, you know, like...
Yeah, because it was a human story of someone who had to undergo a particular challenge, and you wanted to see them overcome it. And it was a difficult health malady, and it was a complex procedure, and that, there was something of value to watching that.
Yeah.
And to appreciating...
Some sort of pedagogical value to
Yeah.
it. I mean, it was gruesome. They would show, you know, live operations of people being cut open, and... So on. It was, you know, it was more gruesome than most horror films of
this
the day.
This is very true.
But over time, TLC evolved into an exploitative network. I mean, every show. I mean, whether it's, you know, My 600-Pound Life or as you
My Gypsy
before,
Wedding, My Big Fat Armenian Stepfather's Wedding,
yeah.
everything. Every or what about, ethnic group just debased and...
What about that show where that Duggar guy came, you know, that molester, what's his name, something or other. You know what I'm talking about? The Duggar kid? The guy who was accused of molesting his sister?
Oh, my Lord.
Big family, eight people, whatever, you know. Honey Boo Boo.
Yeah.
I mean, so, where's the lesson there? Exploitation sells.
Yeah.
People enjoy seeing otherness exploited.
Uh-huh.
Is that right? Is that wrong? I don't know. This movie is is very reprehensible in many ways. It's like the complete antithesis of PC. If a film like this was released today,
it would not be ever, for the far flung fringes of extreme horror. There's no way this thing would be made.
The director would be drawn and quartered.
Yeah,
you know? But we live in a hyper PC society, you know, where we have to be very, very sensitive to, and that's great. I mean, I'm glad that we've evolved, you know, beyond a lot of harmful depictions of various fringe groups, not just fringe groups, but ethnic groups, what have you. But at the same time, it's almost we've swung too far in the other direction, mm-hmm. where we can't enjoy something.
You can't have a Mexican-themed lunch with burritos and sombreros, because a sombrero is somehow the embodiment of Mexican culture in the way that Lederhosen represents all Germanness.
Right.
It's absolutely like reductive nonsense.
And unless you're Mexican, you're appropriating that culture, how dare you?
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me of that controversy not that long ago where there was a university campus in the States. For years and years and years, they offered a free yoga class for the students, you know, to help them relieve stress, help them practice mindfulness.
I'm unhappy to report this was Canada.
Was this in Canada?
This was in Ottawa.
Oh,
it's so depressing. Oh, God.
And what happened? What did they do? They canceled the class.
They canceled the class because of cultural appropriation, which I'm not even sure exists to the extent that they think it does.
This was an
Eastern practice, and we Westerners shouldn't adopt it. So don't culturally appropriate our vaccines, if you don't want that.
Because the instructor was not of Indian descent.
Heaven forfend.
He was a certified yoga instructor that was teaching this course for free as a service to students for over a decade. No one complained, and somehow, you know, the higher-ups in the academic ivory tower decided that this is offensive cultural appropriation. Get rid of it.
Thankfully, cooler heads prevailed, and it was reinstated.
But it's funny, because at one point, the instructor decided, she said, hey, okay, you know what, if yoga is offensive, let's change the name to mindful stretching. How's that?
Oh, no.
And even that was like, no. But enough, you know, outrage was...
Yeah, enough phony outrage was generated.
So,
although this film, The Simple Dwarf, there's enough genuine outrage that could be mustered here. My God. There's so much stuff in here that I really did not want to see and I was exposed to. And this thing was way more exploitative, way more jarring, way more disgusting than Last House on the Left or House by the Cemetery. Any of the more Martyrs, any of these things, it's up there with anything as disgusting as maybe you will ever see in this space, I would argue.
Okay, well.
Really disgusting.
Okay.
But at the outset, it seems like a happy-go-lucky scene on a street with just two strangers meeting, one of whom has a little toy dog.
Yeah, and it happens to be a little person. you have a girl, ostensibly, although she doesn't look, she looks to be about, you know, her mid to late 20s, and she's drawing a hopscotch board on the sidewalk, and in order to partake in that innocent childlike pastime. And turning the corner is the titular sinful dwarf. This is Olaf. And he's resplendent in his plaid shirt, tucked in, sort of pair of khakis. And in one hand, he's brandishing this gigantic teddy bear. And in another hand, he's got a leash. On the other hand, the leash is not a Doberman Pinscher or what have you. It's one of those toy dogs. Those toy, you put the batteries in and he yaps.
Yaps.
Yip, yip, yip. You know, really
and she's really taken with it. Yeah, and they have this little tender moment where they sort of they meet and, oh, they, I love
this
your
is,
dog.
This is called meeting cute, like in a romantic comedy.
Although there's no dialogue.
No, there's no dialogue. But, you know, you're okay, well, hey, you know, maybe this is the station nation. Maybe this is, you know, a little man finding love in a big world. Yeah. I don't know. He takes her back to his place, invites her into the room. Next thing you know, he takes his walking stick and he clubs her over the head. Credits roll.
Yeah.
And these very bizarre, surreal set of credits.
Yes.
Where we have all manner of clockwork mechanical toys, wind-up toys, what have you. A giraffe, a penguin, and every...
Yeah, a teddy bear, all this stuff moving around with symbols and little mechanical toys.
Yeah, and this sets up this really off-kilter sort of weirdness of this film. So, as the film proper begins, we meet this couple, this is sort of proper English couple, Peter and Mary, and they're looking for a place to stay. A rooming house, and because they're sort of hard up, they don't have they're
modest means because his career as a TV writer is not taken off as he'd hoped, and they can only afford to spend £6 a week on their lodging
because
and
the last place was £10 a week.
Yeah, and, yes, and what's left to them is this sleazy rooming house, in which there are many in big cities like Toronto.
Yeah,
and
so they knock on the door, and this very. But odd-looking woman, at first you don't see her. You see her from behind. And she's sort of saying, well, there's no rooms to let. And then she sees the
there's
woman.
There's no rooms at the inn for there's Mary.
Right, because that's she only sees Peter. But then she sees Mary, and she's like, oh, okay, well, sure. Olaf, would you show them to their room? And there's a dwarf. And it turns out that this woman, whose name is Lila Lash, is the mother of Olaf. And they operate this rooming house. So they take this couple up to the top floor, and it is just sleazy, squalid, disgusting.
Yes. It reminded me, I was taking notes, and I said it's akin to the disgusting flop house New York City, in quotes, from Basket Case.
Hotel
and
Rosa.
Then you mentioned that this inspired Frank Henenlotter.
Yeah,
which I thought, whoa, this is amazing. I could see where the dots connect.
Yeah, indeed. Now, lest you think that this is the only source of income for Lila Lash, it's not. Because what's actually going on is that in the attic, they have a harem of women. This is the woman that was clubbed over the head with the cane is one.
Captive white slavery.
They're prisoners. They're chained. They're lying on these disgusting mattresses. And they're junkies because Olaf comes in there and he injects them with heroin.
Yeah,
and
in the buttocks and in the arm where there's track marks all over. And then this is where we start to really get a sense of how sleazy this thing is, just even on a surface level.
And then these Johns just walk in and out and they have their way with these women. And in the original cut, I mean, it was pretty disgusting. But now in this hardcore cut, when you see it even, you know, go further, it's really disgusting. If that's not perverted enough, I mean, their first night in their new abode, Pierre Mary, you know, they're doing their conjugal activities.
Yeah.
And Olaf has a little, it's not even a little people, it's a pretty big hole.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't notice. He's there leering at the two.
Mm-hmm. And he's just looking in lasciviously, and it's just absolutely bizarre. And right away, Mary's like, I don't want to stay here. Something is amiss. And
I feel like I've been watched, she says, quite rightly.
Yeah. And Peter, though, is like, oh, you know, it's all I can afford. I need to get my feet on the ground.
Pound the pavement, get some legitimate work so we can get out of here.
So he's out there every day looking for work, whereas poor Mary is left in this home, and she's hearing these noises throughout the day, people coming, people going, and of course these are the people that are
the
visiting
availing themselves of the services
yeah
of the attic.
Not only that, but Lila Lash, the matron of the house, the mother of Olaf, is she has a friend who she likes to entertain. This is Minnie, her friend Minnie, and they're these two like boozy, just like floozies.
Dowager bitty types, and they guzzle beefeater gin like there's no tomorrow, yeah. And they put on these little performances for one another, and the cat house madam, mm-hmm. She dons this.
She's a faded TV star, apparently. Yeah. Like, they allude to some sort of fire. She's got a scar on her face. I guess you would assume that happened in the fire.
And then maybe killed her career, maybe.
Exactly. So, in her glory days, perhaps she was some sort of Carmen Miranda-esque...
Charo or something, yeah. Doing this coochie-coochie-coo dance number. She dons this banana headdress and belts out these tunes. And she says, though, that she had a nightclub act where she mimicked Mae West and Danny Kaye and Dietrich, and she puts on this performance accompanied by Olaf on the piano, right. And his little feet can't reach the pedals. This is such a weird scene,
yeah.
And as they're getting boozed up and just having a rip-roaring good time.
Mm-hmm. And, just to further the exploitation of, like, a little person, Olaf, I don't know how old he was when he made this thing. Torben.
Yeah, yeah.
He
doesn't look that much younger than his mother.
Exactly. And he's playing with the toys, and he's got to come up into a car. He's got all these little wine toys.
Too much, yeah.
It's really, really, really just kind of really wrong. But throughout all this, there's another little story going on, and that's the procurement of the heroin. That in order to keep these women...
There's a small business that's running the heroin out of France, and it's called Santa Claus's Workshop, and it's a toy store.
Mm-hmm.
And the proprietor, who's this bearded, portly fellow...
Who's referred to as Santa Claus?
Yeah,
You said resembles somewhat, maybe like a gone to see Sammy Hagar.
Yeah, from Van Halen.
Although Sammy Hagar has
he does look good. He's 70. Give him a break.
Yeah, he looks really good.
he puts out a job posting for a personal assistant, and down on his luck.
Their original runner, their heroin runner, and we got to mention this heroin is being transported to and from this boarding house. Within a teddy bear. So when we first saw Olaf, walking down the street with that gigantic teddy bear, that was containing the horse.
Yes.
Know? And, the runner gets arrested.
Yeah, so they need a replacement, which is an executive position type post, and Peter needs the money really badly. So he applies, he gets the gig, told immediately he has to go to mainland Europe to pick up a shipment of teddy bears, mm-hmm. In which is stuffed the horse.
Right.
And also this is a neat gambit to remove, not only have him procure the heroin, but remove him from his wife so the madam can turn her out. And this is what they proceed to do while he's on his mission over there in Paris, this weird nebulous mission where he goes to pick up a bunch of boxes. She's left there. Olaf goes in, injects her, chains her to the wall, mm-hmm. And she's introduced into the sex trafficking ring.
Yes, and what an introduction, because
yeah.
Her first client is Olaf himself.
We won't get into that.
Let's just say that something is done with Olaf's walking stick that was not in the original cut of the movie, but it's...
Unbelievable. Absolutely unsettling.
Yeah.
One of the things you need to unsee.
I can never unsee it. Mm. It's been seen. It's up here. It's
really, really shocking, really...
Mm-hmm. So ultimately,
reprehensible.
This film, it's transgressive, it's exploitative, it's sick, it's depraved.
Really degenerate, really degenerate.
At the same time, we watched it, we were entertained, we laughed.
A few times, yeah. And then it got a little beyond the pale for even us.
Well,
but...
don't speak for me. I don't think it did that. I don't know. It's weird because, like, on the one hand, I have these two halves of my brain working, and on the one half, I'm like, this is so fucking wrong, On the other hand, I'm like, this is so right, I love the fact that these films were made. I love the fact these films existed.
For sure.
It represents a simpler time, a time when, this is going to sound terrible. Yeah, the times we live in are progressive. The times we live in are more enlightened. You would hope to think, because then there's a lot of people that want to regress us back to thinking.
There are still taboos, and I was saying that I don't need to see real sex on film, and I cited the example of the Michael Winterbottom
mm-hmm.
crap film called Nine Songs, where this couple meets in Europe and they go see, was it nine concerts?
Yeah.
And they basically just fuck in between, and it's all real sex, and it caused quite a stir because casting for the role was very difficult for the women. The men, obviously, it was not a big deal to find a whole slew of people who would line up for this role, but they got a neophyte to star in this, who's since not been heard from again, really, to the best of my knowledge. Sex, real sex on screen, there's something to be said for leaving something to the imagination.
So what you're saying is that there has to be some clear division between hardcore pornography and cinema.
For the most part, yeah. You can get away with it, but yeah. it
if you're seeing sex on screen in a cinematic film, it's not, you know...
It doesn't do anything for me.
But what you're saying is that has to be simulated. It can't be real.
For the most part, I've never seen it being real, which didn't separate me from the proceedings.
Well, there's a film called Romance. I forget the director, Catherine Breillat. I can't remember.
Breillat. Yeah, the French director who made all these just off the charts insane sex films.
She's a provocateur. She made a film called Fat Girl, which I saw at TIFF, the Toronto International Film Festival. And man, I mean, I've never been to a screening like that before where it ends on such a disturbing note where the audience. Like, when the film ends, normally when you go see a movie at a film fest...
People applaud or walk out or whatever.
Yeah, at the end of the movie, people applaud. But this movie, the ending was so fucking shocking, disturbing, that not only was... And the director, Catherine...
Yeah, whatever her name is.
There was not one applause, and nobody spoke on the way out. Everyone was in stunned silence. It was one of the most disturbing things ever. But she made this film Romance, which again was a mainstream movie with real sex... And the female lead was some actress, but the male lead was, I think his name was Rocco Siffredi, or some actual porn star.
Hmm.
So they were sort of blurring the lines there, but all the same, you know, you got to remember, when I first saw The Sinful Dwarf, it did not have the hardcore scenes, okay? So, it's still a transgressively disturbing, exploitative film, just by virtue of the fact that the villain is a little person, and that's, you know, the fact that he's non-normative equates evil, equates perversion.
And it's the way they've continually been depicted until very recently. That's what makes it exploitative.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that their roles were broadened is what doesn't make it exploitative now, that they're just treated like anyone else, although they do allude to In Game of Thrones, to the difficulties he had growing up, but still, he's a proactive, legitimate, leading character, and not one who's just solely based, whose inclusion is solely based on his stature,
right,
which is what this one really is. There's nothing more to Olaf than...
So, ultimately, I mean, The Sinful Dwarf is...
sinful.
It's sinful, it's exploitative, it's extremely sordid.
Unseemly. It really is disgustingly gross.
You feel like you need to take a shower afterwards. However, you know, I mean, I'm a fan of exploitation cinema. The fact that these films were made, the fact that they existed, the fact that, you know, these filmmakers were so either deranged or fearless or what have you, and they put these movies out. I don't know how they marketed these movies. I don't know where the market was for these movies, but it's amazing. It's just, to me, it's...
If only as a counterpoint to something that is more legitimately art. It's you have to, in order to know what's good, you have to know what isn't, and this pushes the boundaries in the other direction, and, the pendulum swinging, Brown Bunny? The other infamous film with
Vincent Gallo. Gallo. With some fellatio between him and Chloe Sevigny.
Yes.
That was quite
That was really something.
Quite the controversy when that came out.
Mm-hmm.
And what a terrible movie that was.
Yes. It certainly did not add anything to that.
Mm-hmm.
we learned so much from The Sinful Dwarf, I don't even know where to begin. I learned that during the lovemaking, there was the soundtrack alternated between torrid flutes and really crazy acid rock that we were jamming out to, which was something about us, maybe.
It was like funkadelic.
A little bit of Hendrix. Yeah. It was really outrageous.
Well, there's
and
something
weird.
Else you learned. There's something about Lars Ulrich you mentioned as you were watching the movie.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, this is the second most reprehensible small person to come out of Denmark since Lars Ulrich. Yeah. Yeah, wow. I I don't know. This is really something. What did you learn?
Yeah, you know what? I've learned that, honestly, Chris.
Where do we even go from here?
No, but that's what I was about to say. It's like, you know, like in Small Tap, right? When they talk about, you know,
turning it up to 11. Yeah, why don't you just make 10 one louder?
Right, and you go, this goes one louder. Yeah. Well, I can go much lower than this. I can go one lower.
Yeah, we've really descended we've plummeted the depths of sleaze on this show. This is the new low.
No, but what I'm saying is that
We could go lower.
Yeah, and
not much lower, albeit, but we could go a little lower.
Now, are you making a little person joke by saying
not
we go
at
lower?
All? We've avoided it the whole show. Little did you know.
This is not a short podcast, is it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, nor is this a short film. No,
we're not doing that.
These people deserve respect.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, what... This is a very germane question. Star rating for The Sinful Dwarf.
Oh, God. Before the cane emerged, I'm going to say 3.
Okay.
And then after that, I really started to question my own set of cohesive moral values and ethical standards. I'm going to give it 2.5. Save for that one scene, 3. It should be watched. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like this. And the fact that it was made so early in the 70s surprised me, because I didn't think they would get this violent and this sleazy this early into that decade. Mm-hmm. I thought this would have been surely from 78 to 84. No, this was ahead of its time, but not in a good way in that mm-hmm. sense. Yourself.
Yeah, I'm going to plead the fifth on this one. Honestly, no, because when it comes to star rating, I mean, I there's so many different levels I can rate this on, and I can rate it as an exploitation film, I can rate it as an actual piece of cinema. I'm just gonna abstain from giving it a rating altogether, and I'm just gonna say, if our discussion of The Sinful Dwarf somehow piques your interest, watch it, the full uncut version, see what you think, and if you're absolutely morally disgusted and you find it to be completely reprehensible, don't say we didn't warn you.
This is true.
And it's something. It's a film. It was made and it's out there. So, you know,
check it out. And check out our website too, www.reallyawfulmovies.com, and follow us on Twitter, awful_movies. And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.